Welcome to Stateside. I'm Laura Weber Davis, sitting in for April Baer. We saw a report in MLive about the discovery of PFAS chemicals in rainwater. Over the past few years, Michiganders have been alerted to these forever chemicals that don't break down in the environment. The sources of PFAS chemicals are things like firefighting foam, nonstick substances, and water repellents. They've worked their way into the ground, lakes, rivers, and streams, and tap water. Now, a recent report from the EPA's Integrated Atmospheric Deposition Network has found PFAS chemicals in rain. Joining us now to explain is Indiana University professor Marta Vanier. She is a chemist who looks at chemicals in the environment. Professor Vanier, welcome to Stateside.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Can you detail for us a little bit more what this report said in this new discovery on PFAS in the environment?
Sure. So we have measured PFAS in rain samples collected on the shores of each of the Great Lakes. Starting in August of last summer, we collected the samples every about 2 weeks. And our results show that there is significant amount of PFAS in these samples, although our results are preliminary and we still have a lot more work to do.
Yeah, the numbers that I saw were sort of eye-popping, having covered this story a bit myself. When I saw 1,000 parts per trillion in these droplets of water, I found that a bit shocking because 70 parts per trillion is already considered a threshold that is far too high. And folks who are activists in this field are looking for things like 2, 4, 6 parts per trillion. So were you concerned by those levels?
So the number that you are referring to is one single data point.
Okay.
And I wouldn't be too hung up on that specific number. I would look more at general levels. The numbers may be higher than we were anticipating, but at the same time, we should not relate necessarily so directly the levels that we measure in precipitation with the levels that one should aim for in drinking water, because when the rain falls down, it gets diluted down. Mm-hmm. So the two numbers don't necessarily correlate so directly.
Is it safe to say that there are these PFAS chemicals raining down in Michigan throughout the state, or would we only find it in specific places?
No. So I think it's a general issue. PFAS are widespread. They are found everywhere, even in the Arctic. So I have no reason to believe that they wouldn't be found in other locations than the ones we monitor. So I think it's a widespread issue, not only in Michigan in general. It's a global concern.
So if you can return us to biology and earth sciences classes we probably would have taken in high school, would you briefly describe how PFAS maybe works its way out of the ground and then into the air and comes down in the form of rain?
The problem with PFAS is that once they are out there, because of their physical chemical properties, they accumulate and they're very persistent. And this is why they've been called forever chemicals, because once they are out there, they cannot be broken down. They can volatilize from the products or the ground or the particles where they are, and they get transported also with dust. And so when we think about rain, there's really water, but also small particles. And so the rain washes off everything that is in the air, not only what is in the vapor, but also the little particles. They are washed off of the atmosphere and they end up in precipitation. And then they enter all other bodies of water.
How concerned should the average Michigander or anyone be? You know, the state DNR issued a warning to avoid contact with any of the foam we might find in lakes and rivers. We've also had a don't eat the fish warning in plenty of areas. So since we know that it's now in rain, do we need to curb puddle splashing and, you know, make sure our kids aren't eating snow in the winters?
No, I don't think so. I don't think anybody should be concerned personally as citizens about becoming stain resistant or waterproof just by being out in the rain. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly something to keep in mind that regulators and who should monitor these chemicals should keep in mind. But Personally, I'm not concerned. My kids are running around and jumping into puddles. I don't think it's an immediate concern right now.
When I think about the discovery of this vast array of chemicals, you know, some of the questions I ask myself have to do with how long have they been in these places and now we're just learning about them versus their new exposure into new locations. Are we assuming that these chemicals have been in rainwater and been in our rivers and lakes for as long as these chemicals have been used, whether it's Scotchgard or firefighting foam, which have been used for decades, that then therefore these chemicals have also been in these places? Or are they just emerging for the first time?
I think they are not emerging now. They've been there for a very long time because of what we were mentioning before, that once they are released, they stay out there for a long time and they can cycle through the environment. It's what we call the grasshopper effect. So they get out from, let's say, the ground for simplicity. They get volatilized, then they precipitate, and the process moves on. And you can imagine sort of figuring out as like a grasshopper. So once they are out there, they stay out there. So I think what we see is a mixture of new use and past use. And you can differentiate a little bit between these two uses, historical uses versus fresh uses, by looking at individual compounds that we see. So in the past, we used a lot more of the long chain PFAS, like PFOS or PFOA. And then more recently, the industry has transitioned towards short chain compounds. And we see a little bit of this transition in the samples because we can detect both categories. So I think we see both old use and new uses.
Interesting. So you hear about these massive filtration systems that are being put in municipalities where these chemicals are being found in drinking water, and that these filtration systems will help filter it out, getting into people's sinks and bathtubs and showers. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about eradicating the issue altogether, and we're talking about how to filter it out of all groundwater or all rain that's coming down from the sky or whatever chain of events needs to happen to get rid of these chemicals, and yet we call them forever chemicals, how are we even beginning to discuss how to remove the chemicals from the environment altogether?
That's a tough question. In my perspective, we should address the issue before we have to remediate the environment. And I don't think we can control what's out there that much anymore. We can certainly use some filtration systems, as you mentioned, for sure. But it would be really hard to control everything and remediate. And it's going to be very expensive to do that as well.
So you're saying we need to focus more on not adding any more to the existing problem?
Absolutely, yes. I think that's the way to go. We need to mitigate the damages and the issues of what's already out there and focus most of our efforts in preventing more of these PFAS from being released.
What are the implications if we, the consumer, or we, the institutions that oversee chemicals, ignore or continue to ignore the problems that are mounting with PFAS?
Well, we'll continue to see the levels of these chemicals raise in the environment. And the thing is that there's some hints, actually more than hints, there's some evidence that these chemicals have significant negative effects on human health and on the environment. So we need to address this issue now. And one approach that has been suggested and proposed by a group of scientists is to treat these chemicals as a single class and regulate them as a single class rather than one chemical at a time, because we simply don't have the time to address every chemical one by one, because there's more than 5,000 of them. So we need to approach them as a group all together.
A group of forever chemicals rather than thousands of individual harmful chemicals. Yeah,
exactly.
Where does your research go next on this topic?
So we have a lot more work to do. We need to collect a lot more samples to get a better and more solid idea of what the levels are and look at spatial differences. And we'll also continue to then compare the levels for PFAS with those that we measure for other legacy contaminants within the same samples to see how they compare with chemicals that we know a lot more and we have monitored for significantly longer time, like PCBs or pesticides like DDT, for example, or other flame retardants.
Well, Marta Vanier, we hope that you will come back and continue to keep us abreast of the situation as it evolves, hopefully with some increased protections for folks regarding PFAS.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Indiana University Professor Marta Vanier. She's a chemist who also looks at chemicals within the environment.